Give me an example of something that could occur, perhaps a body making its way into our system and causing havoc, where it would be worthwhile to report what was about to happen in order to save lives. In other words, a limited catastrophic event, I guess. What do you envision?
Well, let's put it this way. We need a lot of people on this planet to make it work. And we've seen events in the past. We know historically, of course, about events in the past that have really devastated Earth, and we've had to recover from this. The Egyptians told the ancient Greeks that there were five earth-shattering events that took their civilizations to their knees, and then they had to rebuild five separate times. This is what the ancient priest cults told Solon when he went back to Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently these are recoverable. And I did a little briefing this morning getting ready for the show. I read your book, and in there both you and Whitley talked about these events are obviously recoverable. So if we knew something was coming, I'm certain we'd have a better recovery rate than if everybody were just blindsided.
Well, give me an idea of what we might face, a recoverable scenario.
Okay.
What might a recoverable scenario be?
Okay, let's take an example. A new comet comes in long in advance. Astronomers with their telescopes are able to determine that we are going to have a close encounter, let's say, with an object that's the size of our moon. But this thing's going to be coming by, not at the speed of our moon orbiting us, but at a very high velocity.
All right.
It's going to set a gravitational wave into the mantle of the Earth. It's going to cause tidal waves that are 50 to 100 feet above normal. And we know the path of this as it's going to pass over Earth. It's not going to collide with us. There will be some electrical discharge activity, possibly. Much of this will be absorbed in the upper atmosphere, but we will have some severe storming. Well, if you move the population away from the shores, 95% of Earth's population is near the shore, and we would lose that 95% if nobody said anything. Now, what's the recovery rate? Will people be able to move back there? Apparently, the tack they're taking is that we don't want all these people moving out into the middle of nowhere and then not have any place to go. So would it possibly make sense to have some kind of pre-planned program around the world where on higher ground we have built giant domed structures, and we could use these for sporting events and other things when they're not in use for disaster. But to have a method where the cities can empty out Los Angeles up into the mountains of New Mexico, we're going to house 10 million people for 3 weeks, and then we're going to have to figure out what to do with them. But set all this up, set provisions up, and now we're done with it. We've used some resources. It's going to take us some resources, some time, some building, but now we've got this in place, and maybe it's not the cure-all. Maybe it won't bring us through every possible disaster.
Sounds interesting, but with nothing but perhaps the Hopi lore and Indian lore to go on, I doubt that kind of expenditure would be made, and I'm sure you do too.
Oh, exactly. I'm talking hypothetical.
Yes.
So
once something like this was spotted, and that in itself is a very interesting question, how much notice might we have if something is spotted, something really big, and they do the calculations and they go, oh, darn, or some version of that, and they realize it's going to come very close?
Yeah. And
how much warning might we have?
Well, there again, you could have 10 years warning and people would just go, okay, well, such and such a time. Our Earth is based on a system of laws that are restrictive, and they're not based on human responsibility.
Would 10 years be very likely, really?
We could possibly know, but see, in 10 years, what we've learned about comets, the big ones, is they change their orbits very rapidly because of the tremendous mass influx. Comet Hale-Bopp was changing its orbit on a daily basis. throughout its six-year period, the ephemeris was flashing up faster than you could download it off the Internet.
Yes, being affected gravitationally, tugged this way and that way, I suppose.
Well, it's the tail drag, and that's part of the comet tail drag. When Hale-Bopp first came in, I remember Brian Marsden put out a posting. He's at the Smithsonian. He does the calculation, the orbital calculation, and posts them. He said, this comet is so big that there's no way it's going to have any jetting activity that will affect perturb its orbit. And I, of course, like I save everything, I copied that. And no sooner than they posted the initial ephemeris, then it started changing. Hale-Bopp.
I remember that changing, too. Yes.
Yeah. And
it was weird.
It was a daily basis. I mean, we pulled those things down, like I say, as soon as you got one, the next one was up. And that's due to the tail drag. And the nucleus was so large that jetting, this ice jetting concept, could not possibly account for that. But anyway, the bottom line is big comets change their orbits rapidly.
Yeah, and we had, I'm trying to remember, how much notice of Hale-Bopp did we have? We knew about it how soon?
Well, it was probably 3 years before it actually rounded the sun.
So you're suggesting something perhaps much bigger could give us as much as 10 years warning. They'd see it that far out.
Yeah, and especially with this new equipment they're putting up there.
If they did get something like that, how long would it be? In other words, I think when they first look at an object's trajectory, they get sort of alarm bells that go off if it's headed toward our vicinity.
Right.
A couple of times I remember scientists issuing warnings that something might hit or could hit and then revised that.
Right.
I don't know, a few months later they suddenly, or even a week later, they suddenly revise it and say, no, thought it might, but it's not going to hit.
Right. Right.
So, obviously, there's refinements going on. So, at the 10-year mark, it might be a little far out to say exactly, mightn't
it?
Right.
In fact, the very interesting point is when Hale-Bopp was first discovered, it was on a near-direct collision course with Earth.
Huh.
And I knew the guys. I was in a little more conversant mode at that time with the guys at Goddard. And I called up, and I heard this activity in the background. Obviously, at that time, they knew that it was on a very close path to Earth. Well, in that 3 or 4 year period, it slowed down to the point where we moved ahead 3 months in our expected position, and we were literally a quarter of the way around our orbit by the time Hale-Bopp passed through. But it passed through, if you look at our orbit as a circle on a flat piece of paper with the sun at the center.
You're saying it passed through our orbit.
It passed 1 million miles to the sunward side of, I think it was beyond our orbit. So it was a little bit beyond Earth's orbit, but only 1 million miles, only 4 times the distance to the moon did that comet pass. And even if you don't believe my, say, concept of electrical discharges and all of that, that would have been a close passage. And we would have spent about 20 days in the coma of that large comet. That's how long it would have taken us to pass through the coma. In other words, we would have lost our sunlight, we would have had an influx of water, and possibly a mini ice age as a result of that.